intimately, who you know as mom and dad?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a big part of why I wanted to do this, is because I obviously know them very well, and I've seen my whole life the different public stories that are out there about them. And I wanted to tell a story that was about the people I know, not just my parents, but their friends and comrades, these people who in some ways have been represented in the media for 40 or 50 years, but I think we've never really actually understood what drove them, what made them want to, you know, kind of conduct the struggle in the way they did, what radicalized them. And so for me, it was about understanding my parents, helping my daughters understand my parents. And I think people who listen will not only get a sense of the history, but even if you know the history, I don't know that anybody has seen, you know, has actually heard these people at length discuss why they did what they did and what brought them to that place in their lives.
Zayd Ayers Dorn, creator and host of the new 10-part podcast series Mother Country Radicals from Crooked Media and Odyssey, featuring his parents, the former Weather Underground leaders Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers. The series has been a top 10 podcast in the country. People can listen to the whole thing now, the whole series, for free on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warner, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, and Mary Conlin. Our executive director, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland breaks the record for longest heat wave. Extinction Rebellion activists plan to rally to press Biden to declare a climate state of emergency, and flash floods lead to over 24 deaths in Kentucky. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 1st, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. The Pacific Northwest has endured a week of intense heat, and that's now down to high 80s and low 90s. The heat wave broke records. For more, we go to KBOO's Grant Button.
Portland's continued heat wave broke the record for longest heat wave, previously set in 1981. Portland recorded 7 consecutive days of temperatures reaching 95 degrees or hotter from July 24th through July 31st. This record-breaking week featured temperatures over 100 degrees 3 times and lasted longer than forecasters initially predicted. Last year's heat dome caused 69 deaths in Multnomah County. Now, the medical examiner is reportedly looking at 10 possible heat-caused deaths from last week's record-breaking heat wave. Cooling shelters in Multnomah County remain open until Sunday, contrary to their initial plans. The continued worsening of global warming fuels the week-long heat spells, which are historically uncommon in the Pacific Northwest. Fortunately, as the week progresses, cool air is expected to blow inland from the coast, giving Oregon's relief from the heat.
That was KBOO's Grant Button. Last week, Senators Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer came to agreement on a bill called the Inflation Reduction Act that would spend $369 billion on climate efforts. This is a major step forward for the usually climate-skittish Manchin, and it represents a significant investment in the United States' climate future. But it's not without its critics. Bill or no bill, activists are pushing for the Biden administration to do more, in particular for Biden himself to declare a climate state of emergency. Members of the climate activist group Extinction Rebellion PDX plan to rally Tuesday at noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland to push Biden to declare the climate state of emergency. I spoke with Lynn Hanlon of Extinction Rebellion PDX to learn more. So what's the action that Extinction Rebellion has planned for Tuesday?
It starts at noon at Pioneer Square, and this is, we're just basically trying to get the word out to have people contact the White House and tell Biden to declare a climate emergency. And our group, Extinction Rebellion, is doing this local action, but this is a nationwide thing that's organized by People Versus Fossil Fuels.
So why is it so important, in your view, for Biden to declare a climate state of emergency?
Well, I mean, we are clearly in an emergency. More people died in Portland just in this last week from the latest heat wave, and it's only going to get worse. And, you know, there's with the fires and the heat waves and the flooding and all the climate disasters around the world, it's like it's time, it's past time. And declaring a climate emergency would give Biden more power to get some stuff done without, you know, getting Joe Manchin's approval, because that guy doesn't prove anything good.
Well, I wanted to ask about that as well. Where does Senator Joe Manchin's support for the Inflation Reduction Act fit in? It does offer quite a bit of money for climate crisis mitigation, I suppose.
It does offer some funding for climate mitigation. It offers some stuff for, you know, some stuff for renewables and everything, but only at the cost of increasing oil and gas production in this country. They can't have all the good stuff about renewable energy can only happen if after the oil and gas leases are actually sold. So we have to spend more money. We have to increase oil and gas production in order to get any action on renewables, which is just insane. It makes no sense. It's bad phrasing, but yeah, it doesn't make sense to me or to any of us in the climate justice movement.
And what do you think is often misunderstood about this issue?
I mean, I think that most people are now aware that climate change is a thing. You know, now that everything is burning up and people are dying, they're finally taking it kind of seriously, but the actions are not reflecting that. And that's the problem right now. And doing, you know, doing some, a little bit of expansion of renewable stuff is, that's nice, but until we actually curb, reduce, and head towards an end of fossil fuel reliance, we can't do anything. We can't do it without slowing down the use of fossil fuels. We have to dial that back. We can't just, you know, solar our way out of it. And that's a lot of things. And there's some, you know, there's things like, you know, weatherizing homes and doing things like that are definitely a very good step, but we need to just end our reliance on fossil fuel. Full stop.
How can listeners find out more about Extinction Rebellion or the rally tomorrow?
You can go to our site, Extinction Rebellion XRPDX, xrpdx.org is the site. And then, so our action tomorrow is noon at Pioneer Square. And you can also go to the People Versus Fossil Fuels site to learn more about this in general, what's going on with the nationwide action.
Cool. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything we didn't get to cover yet?
honestly, the more people that show up, the more that this gets taken seriously, and it's a nationwide thing, so we're really wanting people to show up everywhere, and in this area, it's Portland, Pioneer Square, this is the place to be. It's also, you can call the White House and tell them to declare a climate emergency, but visibly showing up, we've noticed, does make a difference, and it is really important, and we just can't wait. We can't wait any longer.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
That was Lynn Hanlon with Extinction Rebellion PDX. The McKinney wildfire burns on the California-Oregon border, and it's already the largest fire in California this year. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the blaze.
The largest wildfire seen so far this year in California may get bigger. The McKinney Fire is burning uncontrolled in Northern California's Klamath National Forest, just south of the Oregon state line. Thunderstorms and hot, windy conditions have created the potential for additional fire growth. United States Forest Service spokesperson Adrian Freeman said, quote, "The fuel beds are so dry and they can just erupt from that lightning. These thunder cells come with gusty, erratic winds that can blow fire in every direction," end quote. The blaze expanded to more than 80 square miles just 2 days after erupting in a largely unpopulated area of Siskiyou County. Trees along Highway 96 have been incinerated. A second, smaller fire just to the west erupted after a lightning strike Saturday. About 400 structures were under threat from the two California fires. A third fire, which was on the southwest end of the McKinney blaze, prompted evacuation orders for around 500 homes yesterday. That fire escaped its containment line yesterday morning, and the McKinney fire remained 0% contained as of yesterday evening. Some residents still chose not to evacuate despite orders to leave. Fires remain problematic in other western states as well. In northwest Montana, a fire near the town of Elmo has grown to about 17 square miles. In Idaho, the Moose Fire has burned more than 75 square miles near the town of Salmon. It was 21% contained as of early yesterday. California Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency over the weekend. The proclamation allows the governor to make emergency response and recovery effort decisions and access federal aid. The Pacific Coast Trail Association urged hikers to get to the nearest town, while the U.S. Forest Service closed a 110-mile section of the trail from the Etna Summit to the Mount Ashland Campground in southern Oregon. Scientists say climate change has made the West warmer and drier in the past 30 years, and that it will continue to make weather more extreme and wildfires more frequent and destructive. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Malarkey Roofing in North Portland got the largest ever environmental fine from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality last year, and now it's agreed to a mitigation plan. Malarkey Roofing is located in the Kenton neighborhood, and in October, they received a major fine because of their pollution rates. In 2009, they failed to notify the state that they had added a second exhaust stack that increased the amount of formaldehyde pumped into the air to around 10 tons per year. It wasn't until 9 years later that the roofing company told the DEQ that there may be more pollution than they'd previously reported. For that, they'll pay a $1.45 million fine, some of which can go towards environmental projects in the neighborhood if they choose. Malarkey has also installed a device to help reduce their emission of formaldehyde, reportedly by 90%. Kenton residents are still trying to figure out how that formaldehyde pollution has impacted their health. Breathing formaldehyde can cause burning in the eyes, nose, and throat, and some studies have shown that prolonged exposure can even increase the risk of cancer. The Kenton Neighborhood Association has signed off on the agreement between Malarkey Roofing and the State Department of Environmental Quality, but it remains concerned about the environmental threats in their neighborhood. Flash floods in eastern Kentucky have a rising death toll, and Senator Joe Manchin defends support of the Inflation Reduction Act. With those stories and more, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
All we're doing is basically saying the largest corporations in America that have $1 billion of value or greater have to pay a minimum of 15% to help this great country.
Democratic West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin over the weekend defended his decision to support the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. He maintained the bill does not raise taxes, as Republican critics have suggested, but closes loopholes. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi began a tour of Asia on Sunday, but has remained silent about a potential visit to Taiwan.
So again, we have global responsibilities, whether it comes to three things, I always say, security, economy, and governance. And this will be part of that.
Pelosi is leading a congressional delegation to Singapore, Malaysia, South Korea, and Japan. Tennessee's primary election is this Thursday, and experts say what happens at the ballot box is closely tied to health outcomes in communities. More than 30,000 people have chosen to vote early. The Tennessee Justice Center's Senior Director of Health Policy and Equity, Kaniki Young, says the pandemic has highlighted how public health and voting are intertwined.
The channels that were created to convey public health messages during the pandemic, those same channels can be utilized as get out the vote platforms.
And in the mountains of eastern Kentucky, the death toll rose to 28 on Sunday as emergency crews continued search and rescue efforts after devastating floods. Lending director with the Mountain Association, Robert Allen, says many of the region's local businesses were just starting to make a comeback from the pandemic, and now they'll need help rebuilding. He adds that residents and rescue crews who are beginning the cleanup process are counting on shops and stores to provide necessities.
There are grocery stores that are there that are the vital part of the community where the food source is. There are businesses that are going to have a really hard time building back, and the economic impact is real.
In the UK, Prince Charles, heir to the British throne, faces widespread criticism after a report released over the weekend found his charity accepted more than $1 million in donations from the family of Osama bin Laden. On Saturday, the prince's office confirmed the bin Laden family gave money to the royal charity, but disputed claims Prince Charles was involved or made the decision personally to accept it. In Ukraine, President Vladimir Zelensky has ordered the evacuation of the Donetsk region, where the fight against Russian forces continues. It's reported more than 80% of residents have already fled the region, where the Ukrainian government has accused Russian forces of targeting civilians. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a special rebroadcast of our interview with Daniel Chomsky on what the mainstream media misses about inflation. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Then stick around at 7 for Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 66 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will continue to be sunny and warm with a high of 87. Today in history, in 1876, Colorado is admitted as the 38th U.S. state. The quote of the day is from French fashion designer Yves Saint Laurent, who was born today in 1936. Saint Laurent said, quote, "Fashion fades, style is forever." A disparaging religious pamphlet surfaced on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and it prompted the tribe to further regulate Christian missionaries. With that story and more, it's Art Hughes with National Native News.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. A disparaging pamphlet that resurfaced on the Pine Ridge Reservation prompted a series of actions by the Oglala Sioux Tribal Council to regulate church ministries. The Tribal Council initially voted to suspend all Christian missionary work, only to rescind that action a day later, instead requiring all outside religious organizations to register with the tribe. The offending flyer is a duplicate of one distributed years ago that uses the Lakota word for the Creator, calling it a demon idol, among other things. It instead claims Jesus is the one true God. Earlier in the month, the tribe ousted Matthew Monfort from the Jesus is King missionary for distributing disparaging pamphlets. They then ordered an investigation into the non-denominational Christian Dream Center, which some members claimed was associated with Monfort. During the emergency meeting, Oglala citizen Bernice Redbear addressed representatives of the Dream Center, asking how they intend to reach out to Pine Ridge residents with such harmful language.
If you wanted to save me, how would you do it? What kind of a message would you give me instead of saying all these things that the God that I pray to is an idol, is a demon idol?
The founder of the Dream Center denies any connection with Monfort or the offending pamphlets. Lori McAfee says her organization is the victim of false rumors and innuendo.
But you can say anything to anybody. You can post anything and people believe it. All I know is God sent us here to love the people. And we didn't just come. And I see a lot of people come. But I've been here 21 years and now all of a sudden this is happening.
The discussion over the flyers sparked references to the abuses by Catholic priests and other religious leaders at boarding schools designed to eradicate Native culture and language. Some members also talked about how Pope Francis's visit to Canada to apologize for abuses in that country opened wounds for boarding school survivors. Pine Ridge has a long history of concerns about Christian missionaries exploiting the reservation to raise money. A federal judge has dismissed libel lawsuits against media companies filed by a former Kentucky Catholic school student who was the center of criticism stemming from a 2019 encounter at the Lincoln Memorial. Nick Sandman was among students wearing Make America Great hats at a rally in the U.S. Capitol. A video of him standing face-to-face with Nathan Phillips, who was drumming and singing, went viral. Some of the students mocked Phillips' singing. Many viewers interpreted Sandman's facial expression as a sign of disrespect. Sandman sued several news outlets, including the New York Times and Rolling Stone magazine. The suit centered on repeating Phillips' claim that Sandman was blocking him from moving past. The judge said the claims are objectively unverifiable and thus unactionable claims. An attorney for Sandman tells the Lexington Herald Leader they are planning on appealing the decision. The Duwamish tribe is pushing for representation on Seattle's inaugural Indigenous Advisory Council. Fox 13 Seattle quotes tribal chairwoman Cecile Hansen as saying that denying the Duwamish a seat contradicts the council's legitimacy and intention to be inclusive and reparative. She notes the irony of excluding the voice of the tribe, whose notable chief from the mid-1800s is the city's namesake. The Duwamish is not federally recognized. The council was established last year to provide input on issues related to the city's indigenous populations. Five of the panel's nine members are assigned by the city council. The remaining four are appointed by the mayor. The Navajo Nation is headed into its tribal primary election Tuesday with at least 15 candidates for president. One of them is incumbent President Jonathan Nez, who faces challengers including the tribe's former vice president Frank Daish and former Attorney General Ethel Branch. The top two vote-getters go on to the November general election. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
The migratory monarch butterfly population dropped 95% between the 1980s and the 2020s. It's now been added to the red list of threatened species from the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. Roz Brown has more.
An insect species that can evoke childhood memories is in trouble and has just been added to the red list of threatened species compiled by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The orange and black migratory monarch butterfly population has been dropping for several decades. Dr. Rebecca Quinones-Pinon, Chief Monarch Recovery Strategist for the National Wildlife Federation, explains that effects from climate change meant milkweed wasn't blooming during their migration last spring, preventing the butterflies from laying eggs. She says milkweed isn't as common as it used to be across the U.S.
The main issue is the fact that we continue to lose native habitat. So the monarchs struggle to survive and maintain a really good population size.
Pesticides sprayed on crops also can inadvertently kill milkweed growing in nearby ditches. That's another problem for the migratory butterfly population, which has dropped 95% from the 1980s to 2020. Advocates are urging lawmakers to pass the Monarch Action, Recovery, and Conservation of Habitat Act of 2021 to establish a rescue fund and create a conservation strategy. Quinones-Pinon says people can help the imperiled species by buying plants at nurseries that follow best practices for pollinators and turn their yards and gardens into monarch habitat.
We can provide the native milkweed. We can provide native nectar plants that can help the monarchs also to have a source of food while they are migrating.
She believes many people have an emotional connection to the iconic butterfly, citing reverence for the insect in Mexico, where their migratory arrival in winter coincides with the country's Day of the Dead festival.
is a great ambassador, busy in so many different places, that also creates that connection between different communities and cultures.
Advocates say the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, passed by the House of Representatives but awaiting a vote in the Senate, also would dedicate almost $1.4 billion to help save multiple wildlife species at risk. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
The pandemic has widened educational gaps for children of color. As Suzanne Potter reports, some advocates promote guaranteed basic income programs as a way to fight the poverty that undermines kids' education.
Economically disadvantaged Black children in California have the lowest scores in math and reading, made worse by the pandemic. But a new approach to combat poverty is spreading across the country. LA County is 1 year into a guaranteed income program, giving $1,000 a month to 1,000 low-income residents. Shapira, a single mom, is part of a similar program, the Magnolia Mothers Trust in Jackson, Mississippi. She says the financial stability makes it possible for her 15-year-old daughter to dream big.
Me and my brother, we dropped out of school early. I really want her to be the first one out of our family to graduate with an actual high school diploma, no GED, and go off to college.
Advocates of a federal guaranteed income program claim it would make a huge dent in childhood poverty, especially now that the pandemic child tax credit has expired. Another mom in the program, Johnny, says the support kept her family afloat during the pandemic.
My daughter's school shut down, so I didn't really have no one to be at home with her. I didn't want her to fail. So I had to quit my job to help my baby because I want to give her a better education.
Sequoia, who also took part in the program, faced a similar dilemma.
When school started, I had to leave because I had nobody to put my daughter on and off the bus. And they wanted us to work 8 to 12 hours a day. And I was going to have to make a decision. It was going to either be that job or my child. So I picked my child.
And Annette used the money from the program on school supplies for her kids and herself as she pursues a master's degree.
It's been helping me to do more for my kids. If I finish school, I know that it'll make me a better person also to be a better person for my kids.
California has 2.1 million Black residents. Some 80% of Black households have female breadwinners, and more than 70% are headed by single mothers. This story was produced with original reporting from Katie Fleischer for Ms. Magazine. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Mental health is a growing concern on college campuses. Eric Tegedoff has more on how understanding the support schools offer can be important for parents.
Many parents in Oregon and around the country will soon be bidding their children farewell as they head off to college for the first time. And a growing question on some parents' minds is about the mental health supports schools provide. According to a recent survey, 3 in 5 college students have been diagnosed with a mental health condition. Schools like the University of Oregon have beefed up their services in recent years to meet the growing demand. Mariko Lin, the university's assistant director of counseling services, says when they first come to college, students can be scared about making appointments with health services.
But I want to make sure that parents and family members know that we really want to help their students and are looking forward to them reaching out to us to make those appointments and to get the care that we want to give them.
Lin says the University of Oregon is contracting with an outside company this year to meet any overflow in demand. Along with individual therapy, Lynn notes her school also provides group therapies related to specific topics, such as sexual assault survivors, as well as for marginalized community members. Nancy Roy is with the Jed Foundation, which aims to prevent suicide among young people. She encourages parents to ask schools about their mental health supports when their kids are deciding on a school, such as on college tours. Roy also encourages parents to explore what the university is like beyond the walls of its counseling department.
It's helpful to ask some questions about what is the culture like on their campus? Is it a campus where there's no wrong door for a student to walk through for support? Is everyone open and accepting, offering a warm hand? Are faculty and staff engaged in student well-being?
Roy says parents who know their kids already have therapy needs may want to find local options off campus as well. And while stigmas around mental health are slowly coming down, she says it's important for parents to talk about this issue. For prospective students, Roy says going away to college can be scary, and it's okay to reach out to someone if they need help.
Talk to a friend. Talk to us. Don't feel like you're alone in that, because it's very normal during periods of transition to feel a little bit of anxiety, and that's all right.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 1st, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and Grant Button. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Potter, Roz Brown, Art Hughes, and Nadia Romlagan. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. Thank you. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Much of the economic news in the mainstream media has been about inflation and more recently stagflation. To get a sense of what's really going on with the economy and the way the media covers it, KPFA weekend news anchor and KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Daniel Chomsky, an associate professor of political science at the University of